This is Table Talk with former California State Fire Marshal Ronnie J. Coleman and your host, Michael Williams.
Hello, welcome to Table Talk with former California State Fire Marshal Ronnie J. Coleman and your host, Michael Williams. Today we're talking about mentoring. What is mentoring and how does mentoring apply to the fire service, whether you're a rookie first day on the job or you're just walking into your office your first day on the job as a fire chief? Chief, welcome to the table.
Glad to be here.
What's your definition of mentoring within the fire service?
The word mentor is not just something taken out of context. It actually was the name of Alexander the Great's teacher. A lot of people don't remember the fact that in the ancient world, if you are somebody of great significance, you frequently had to surround yourself with individuals who could give you advice. And mentor was a teacher who would periodically stand in the back and say, hey, did you think about this? Hey, have you thought about that? Are you paying attention to the consequences? A mentoring, in a modern sense, really has more to do with a person who has dedicated themselves to support others as they pursue a course of their life. There's a couple of really good textbooks that have been written on mentoring. It's started coming back into its own in terms of being a methodology probably about 10 or 15 years ago. What it literally means today is that as a person is going through their career development process, regardless of where they start or where they stop, it's developing a relationship with somebody who can help you coach your way to better behavior. That's what mentoring is all about, helping people just be better at what they're doing.
And mentoring seems like it kind of built into the fire service. No one's going to let somebody just walk in the door and start doing firefighting. And yet it seems to drop off shortly thereafter. Once the remedial aspects are met, then everybody's to some extent on their own. Everybody wants to be everybody's buddy, but how much mentoring really goes on to practice and hone your skills. What can we do to bring this back?
Well, I'm not sure it ever went away. I think what's going on is that we're learning more about the terminology. In reality, there are many different working relationships between superior and subordinates. I'll give you another example. Here's a word, coach. What's a coach? A coach is somebody who sits on the sideline and tells you what you're doing wrong on the field, right? Yeah, don't do it that way, do it this way. There are role models. A person can be a role model. In other words, I may not even actually know who you are, but I can look at your life and say, boy, I'd like to be more like so-and-so. We have several people who meet that criteria. We have individuals who are counselors, and a counselor is not the same as a coach. A counselor is kind of setting aside and saying, I'll talk about this, but I won't talk about that, and so forth. When we use the word mentoring, I characterize it as being the buddy system on steroids. When you first became a firefighter, for the most part, most of us got linked up with somebody who would kind of help us. Could be an older firefighter, could be a father, could be an uncle, could be whatever. But a mentor is a little bit more than just a buddy. A mentor is somebody that holds you accountable and asks you the tough questions. A coach doesn't say, how do you think you ought to do this? A coach says, this is the way I want it done. Whereas a mentor will say, why are you doing that? What's your motivation, et cetera? I think what's changing is that as society has become more knowledgeable of these inner complex working relationships, we've given the name mentoring to a kind of a class of behavior where we're helping people help themselves. And I think that that's going to continue to expand. I don't think it's going to get less. I think it's going to get more.
Well, I think that the task book is kind of a two-edged sword on this, because you come in and you're elevating. This is predominantly more with the wildland side of the street than the structure side. But you get your task book, and it becomes like a merit badge book. Your job is to go get the initials and sign off on all this stuff. And that really becomes the focus more than it is, do you actually know how to do these things? Have you actually sat down with somebody that does?
Well, the interesting part about that is the reason the task book concept is gaining in popularity is it replaced another system which was more or less value-driven, like you're doing a good job, you're not doing a good job. And related back to certification process, It used to be if a person sat in a seat for so many hours, they got a certificate. Does that mean they can do the job?
Not necessarily, no.
Not necessarily. So the task book has been introduced to be that next step. I think what mentoring is one step beyond that. The task book drives successful completion of specifics, whereas the mentoring process drives decision-making processes about how to behave. That's not the same.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you find it more difficult or easier to deal in the mentoring concept with your lower rank individuals than with your higher rank individuals, the transition from company to management? Or is it more or less the same?
I'm not sure how I would respond in terms of rank structure. I think it has more to do with relationship than rank. I personally have been a mentor to numerous people in the fire service in a very conscious way, in that I've either had them seek me out or I have sought them out and said, I'd like to help you. I see something here. I think you're a potentially a really good candidate. Mm-hmm. And I sit down and I, you know, blah, 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 blah. There's also a concept that when it comes to mentoring that is used in professions outside of the fire service, what they have what they call personal coaches. And a personal coach is somebody who actually listens to you and says, well, have you thought about this and have you thought about that? It's my belief that the people who benefit the most from mentoring are the ones who have the strongest sense of their own strengths and weaknesses. They're asking for help. I don't think you can force a mentoring relationship on anybody. They have to accept it. They have to speak up.
Well, I think there needs to be some personal accountability and honesty, and you've got to be willing to accept criticism, and you have to be willing to work very focused on certain areas, because we're not all good at all things. It's not possible. And some of our negatives can be overpowering, and it takes a lot of extra work on that, and particularly if you want to go into areas that have a public persona attached to them. You've got to be able to do certain skills, one of which is speak well and write well and present well. And not everybody's able to do that. Speech classes. I know an attorney here in town who's now a judge. He's been very active in drama and takes a lot of acting classes and learned how to sing so that he could be a better attorney in making presentations to who? The jury. He doesn't have to impress the judge or his contemporaries at the bench. That's already, nobody cares. It's the jury you got to convince, and that takes some skill. So in the fire service, the mentoring concept, it's not necessarily on a piece of paper. It's not a square on a task book. It's not a little mark on your red card or what have you. What can we do to get people to want to mentor others? I'm not so sure that folks coming up through the ranks today are as interested in mentoring as our predecessors. Is that true? Or
it's pretty hard for me to say whether it's true or not. I will make the observation, though, that there are probably fewer people doing really good jobs of mentoring today than we have a current need for. Mm-hmm. In other words, we have a need for more of them than we have. I can tell you that as an outside observer of many departments, mentoring in some cases is regarded as a weakness. Like, how come you have to ask so-and-so, you know, to give you this kind of guidance? Don't you have it within yourself? It's kind of like that traditional approach to, well, you know, what's wrong with you if you got to get somebody else to help you? My reaction to where we are in mentoring right now is that as people gain achievement in their lives today, it's entirely appropriate that you give some of that back to the people behind you. You got to give it away to get it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree with that.
Now what I'm saying here is that the people who choose to be mentors really have to have some kind of a sense about themselves that what they're doing is of value to them personally. Mm-hmm. They're helping themselves help other people. And at the same time, they become better persons themselves. I've had several mentoring relationships in my career with people that some of them are not even alive anymore, but they got me somewhere. And the ones that I valued, the ones that I held the most in respect, were ones that were actually kind of weak in some ways themselves and that I gave back to them. In other words, we had a relationship that was reinforcing that strength.
Well, as we were talking on several of our other table talk conversations, one of them notably going for the gold, if people are interested in promoting and getting into the upper ranks of the fire service, or I would say any industry or commercial enterprise, mentoring is a good way to get started, I should think, because they're going to learn. How else are you going to know what skills that you need in order to achieve to where you want to go?
The number one characteristic I'd say makes mentors successful human beings in the long run is the sense of self-awareness. They know what they are. They know who they are. They know what they know. They know what they don't know. And they have a really strong sense of themselves. Probably the strongest feature that a person can have as a mentor is empathy. I get what's going on with this other person. It's not that I want them to be like me. Mentors don't try to convince you to be like them. They try to convince you to be the best you can be. That sounds like something in the Army, doesn't it?
Well, you cannot replicate somebody else. You can walk in their footsteps. You can learn what there is to learn, but that's copying. And copying is not something that is a positive thing.
Well, see, that's the difference between mentoring and role modeling. I'll give you an example, and I'm not going to name names per se, but there are certain people in the fire service that other people look up to and really admire, but they have no idea who they really are. They just know what they see, and they try to copy what they see. If that person is loud, then they think being loud makes them good. Or if that person is funny, they say, well, if I'm funny, then I'm going to be more like him. Mentoring is not that at all. Mentoring is much more subtle and much more based on consequences assessment than emulation.
Well, I think that a relationship, an intimate relationship, starts to form in the mentoring arena because it does require so much honesty and self-assessment and accountability. And those are things that some folks are just uncomfortable with. You mentioned about if somebody's funny, you want to do the same thing. Well, we all know people that can tell jokes, and we know people that can't. Some people can say things and get away with it. Other people say the same thing, and you're not going to get away with it. So copying and just following in the footsteps of others can certainly be a dangerous path to take. And yet, there are people that are successful. I think with my assessment, I look at the successful people and I ask myself, what is that person doing, or more importantly, not doing, that's making them successful and to get to where they're wanting to be? Now, sometimes you don't like the answers to those questions.
I think we've got to remember that mentoring is not in a vacuum. It's part of succession planning and career development. Whenever we talk about mentoring, we don't say that we're doing that devoid of anything else. We got to put into there your training, your education, your experience, your expression of commitment, your personal choices, etc. Because the mentor is not there to tell you what to do. The mentor is there to have you tell yourself why to do it.
You have an interesting story from your days in the Marine Corps at Camp Pendleton, and you run in with a major that I think is worth sharing with the audience of Table Talk.
Well, I wouldn't call it a run-in as much as it was a very interesting conversation that literally changed my career. I was a recon Marine, and we were out on a mission one time, and I'm sitting up in a tree reading a trashy magazine, a trashy novel, and Major Hunt walked over to me and he said, what are you doing? I'm reading a book. He said, why are you reading it? I says, because I'm bored. Got nothing else better to do. He says, then why are you reading something that's of no value to you in the minute you get done with it? And I said, well, I never thought about it that way. I'm just having fun. I'm reading the book. He said, well, how would you like to read a book that would contribute to you being able to do things in the future? I said, like what? He said, like be a better person. So I said, what kind of book would do that? So he reaches in his, what do we call those boxes that you had in the field box, field kit or whatever. And he pulls out this book called Tales of India by Rudyard Kipling. And I'll never forget, it's got a lion's or a tiger's face on the front cover. It says Tales of India. He gave me the book and he said, every time you read one of these stories, I want you to walk in my tent and you're going to tell me what story you finished, and then I'm going to ask you a series of questions. I'm going, eyes rolled back in my head, go, yeah, right, this is going to be, you know. So I started reading the book. Well, as I started reading the book, and I read a lot of the real classics, Rikki Tikki Tavi, The Man Who Would Be King, you know, all those stories that Rudyard Kipling wrote about human condition and human character and all this other stuff. And as I went back into the tent, Major Hunt would say, well, what'd you get out of that story? And I'd start telling him, and he'd say, well, did you think about this? And did you think about that? And et cetera. To make a long story short, I was a high school dropout before I went in the Marine Corps. And when I went out, when I got out, I went right straight to college because I found that reading was a tremendous asset to me personally, and his mentoring created that desire on my part. I still, to this day, have that book. I still keep that book. And I try to encourage people that I've had involvement with is to read for content, not read for entertainment.
That's an interesting story, and I think many of us listening have similar examples, because we wouldn't be where we are today if somebody hadn't taken interest in us. And it's not to say we didn't earn and do our work and pay our dues to get to where we're at, but very, very few people actually get to where they're at completely on their own. And look what that guy did for you, the Major. Did you ever look him up down the road and try to get back in touch with him years later?
I never was able to make contact with him after I got out of the Marine Corps, although I did. I kept contact with a lot of guys I was in the service with, and I still have contacts with some of the guys I was in the service with.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a similar story from high school with an electronics teacher, and probably 30 years later, out of the clear blue sky, this guy calls me. How many kids get looked up by their old high school teachers? And he had taken an interest in what I was doing and the challenges that I had back then. And I was just really surprised. We had a great conversation. This was a guy that, when he was young, went across the United States twice as a hobo in a railroad car. And so he had some very, very interesting stories traveling. Now we're talking Depression era here. But it was very interesting. So he and I had kind of gotten along all along anyway. But he was the same kind of thing. What are you doing? Why don't you try doing this? Don't waste your time. You don't. For those of us that deal frequently with death, we can appreciate there's some absolutes in life. You can't afford to waste time. You have to make that time work for you. You don't need to be a fanatic about it, and you certainly don't need to not have fun. But I can see where the Major's coming from. You know, if you're going to read, read something for your time with value.
You introduced a term that I think is really important to this discussion of mentoring, and that has to do with being interested in somebody else. The mentor is, to a very large degree, driven by your desire to help somebody. And the way you start helping people is you take interest in them. You know, what is their potential? What do you see there that somebody else doesn't see? Why do you see something there that nobody else sees? Mentoring in and of itself, it doesn't really alter an awful lot of things in the big picture, but it definitely alters the potential of individuals. My personal belief is that sometimes people are waiting for what I call the one push rule. The one push rule is you're going along on cruise control, and somebody puts their hand in the middle of your back and shoves you somewhere. And all of a sudden, when you get that shove, suddenly there's a new horizon. You're now involved in something you weren't involved in before. One of the guys who gave me the one push rule was named Edward W. Bent. He was the head of state fire training in California. And he's the person who put me on the program at a training officers conference one time for no other reason than I knew how to operate a camera. And he gave me the one push. I've been teaching ever since.
Well, that's how a lot of us ended up to where we are today, is because most of us didn't get up one day and say, this is what we want to go do. We just kind of fell into it. And I think Table Talk is a great example of mentoring to who knows how many thousands of people will be listening to this over the decades, and in turn sharing experiences that we both have had and those of others, our contemporaries and peers.
Leads to two ground rules. Number one is, who's your mentor and why? And the second question is, who are you mentoring and how?
Exactly. There's no reason for you to be waiting for somebody to come to you. Find somebody that you see has got something going for them and go help them. With that, that's the end of our episode here today of Table Talk. Chief, thank you very much for taking time out to be with us. This has been Table Talk with retired California State Fire Marshal Ronnie J. Coleman and your host Mike Williams. Until next time, let's be safe out there.
This has been Table Talk with Ronald J. Coleman and Michael S. Williams, produced and distributed by the Fire Services Training Institute. Production assistance by Mark A. Ward. Special thanks to Chief Michael Dyer and the Santa Barbara County Fire Department. Remember, train like your life depends on it. Because it does.
Table Talk programming is intended for personal and organizational use only. Any duplication or commercial use is prohibited.